Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. And as usual, when we have a weather situation like we have here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, just to give you a heads up, we have some violent weather heading this way very rapidly. So if we do lose power, even with our backup system here, we'll let you know and we'll go to a previously broadcast show. Quick, Kathy, let's pretend like it happens anyway and we can have the night off. Just so you know, what other good news do I have for you? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We have moron sounds for you tonight from George Bush. What's it about? Oil? Huh? Oil and the economy. Speaking of oil and the economy, ExxonMobil broke its own record for the highest ever quarterly profit for a U.S. company today. Exxon's second quarter profit. Is this the profit number here? Almost $12 billion. And you know what's weird? It was lower than Wall Street expected because, well, you know, ExxonMobil got its ass tossed out of Venezuela and Nigeria. Well, maybe not out of Nigeria, but there was an interruption of the flow of oil from Nigeria. Exxon's second quarter net income rose 14%. 14%. Shell, the world's second largest non-government controlled oil company, their second quarter earnings went to nearly $8 billion. Chevron's annual profit for 2007 was $19 billion. That's America's second largest oil company. America's. Shell is the world's second largest, but Chevron is America's second largest. The profits here are just astonishing. It is time. In the meantime, look what's going on. Look what's going on. Look at the price of gasoline. Look at the price of oil. Now, is there not some sort of disconnect here? Oil is hovering at what? $125, $130 a barrel. 8 years ago, it was around $20 a barrel, or no, $10 a barrel, I think. Gasoline prices here in Atlanta 8 years ago were below $1 a gallon. Now they're above $4 a gallon. What has happened? What has happened? What has happened? I'll tell you what it's time for. It is time that the oil industry in this country be nationalized. It is time that the oil industry be taken away from these massive, irresponsible, profit-insane, price-gouging, environment-destroying sons of bitches who own the companies. Get it off the stock market, get away from futures trading, and turn it over to a responsible government. Not the Bush crime family, oh Jesus, no. But when the next president, when Obama is elected president, then it's time for Bernie Sanders and some other clear-thinking socialists to sit down with President Obama and say, look, this has got to stop. There are certain key industries that have to be socialized. Healthcare is one. Oil industry is another. What else? What would be another? Transportation, mass transportation. These are three key industries. And it's time to cut the crap and realize what we're up against. What by we, I mean we, the, as Bush likes to call us, the consumers. We, the citizens of this country. Transportation, energy, healthcare. Those three industries, it's time to pull the plug on the predatory bastards who are destroying everything. the health care, so-called the pharmaceutical industrial or the medical industrial complex is bankrupting the country. It's bankrupting us individually. The oil industry is bankrupting us. It's driving us into the ground. The lack of mass transportation is a clear indication that corporate America just doesn't give a damn. As long as they control not only the means of production, but also the distribution of that which is produced, and through their speculative branches, they control the price. It's time to bring this to an end. And I'm serious as a heart attack. Transportation, health care, energy. Socialize all three. Look, you know, and for you people who are sitting there with your sphincter muscles tightening up, let me tell you something, Sparky. We already have, the government has socialized losses for corporate America in this country. Profits are still privatized. But you and I take it in the chops every time one of these gouging banking industry or predatory lending industries, the bigger they are, the more you and I have to pay for it. It's already been done. Except the part of it that's been done is the loss part. So that you and I have to clean up the messes these irresponsible pigs continue to make. Now it's time to stop this. It's time to stop it. Transportation, energy, healthcare. It's time to take those three industries out of the hands of predatory capitalism, which is where they sit now. Take them out of the hands of the profiteers who couldn't care less about whether or not you and I are sick, whether or not you and I have a transportation that is not destroying the planet, and whether or not you and I have affordable energy. They don't care, and they never will. They are inhuman. They're corporations run by predators. It's time to stop this. Stop it cold. Now, who has the courage? Yeah. Who has the courage? What politician is going to take a look at the situation and say, you know what? It's time to stop predatory capitalism. The Bush crime family, Clinton before him, Pappy Bush before him, and Reagan before him, they have absolutely and utterly destroyed the regulatory agencies in this country. The whole basis of allowing capitalism to work up to a point, it's all gone now. It's all been destroyed. And this is your result. Unaffordable health care, no mass transportation, unaffordable energy. That's rippling and ricocheting through the entire economy. Do you want this to continue? Because it will, unless it stopped. Only, it's only going to get worse and worse and worse. Until it finally gets to the point where 2 or 3% of the population of the United States will be able to do a goddamn thing, and the rest of us, will sit there and wonder how we allowed this to happen. It's time to stop this. Do you think there's a possibility of that occurring without some sort of open revolution? Has it ever occurred in any society where it finally gets to the point where the people say, wait a second, this has got to stop? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Buy that gasoline machine. You can't afford his gasoline.
Who are the people making money? Snack them chips. While the rest of us are hurting. Choose gas or food. Big oil companies, their shareholders and friends. My back. Go ask those guys at Halliburton.
I'll scratch your.
We can't afford our gasoline. The prices have become obscene. Unleaded regular, forget about supreme. We
can't afford our gasoline. We can't afford our gasoline.
Got the flying monkey right blues? Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. It is time to have a mixed economy. This predatory capitalism that is destroying not just... I mean, take a look. You can make an argument that it is not destroying everything. Can you make that argument? Take a look at what predatory capitalism has done. We've talked about that on this program so many times, that unbridled, left to its own devices, capitalism will devour everything in its path. It will cause wars. It will eat families. It will kill children. It will throw old people into graves while they're still breathing. It is the worst economic form of injustice ever invented. The only thing that makes capitalism tolerable is a strong regulatory counterbalance, and even then, it's iffy, it's risky, because the regulatory agencies are at the whim of the government. And once you have a corrupt government, as we have had in this country for the past 25 years, then the regulatory agencies are turned into nothing but shells of what they should be. Look, we're here. This is where we are. It is time for a mixed economy. I'm not talking about small entrepreneurs. I'm not talking about local businesses and farms and the kind of Jeffersonian small enterprises that was part of his dream for this country. I'm talking about the end of private ownership. And don't even talk to me about, well, Mike, it's stock ownership. Bat squeeze. It's time for the end of private ownership of these massive, major, life-threatening corporations whose products, how they got control of it, who knows? But whose products we've got to have in order to survive. There is no way in hell that these big corporations are ever, ever, ever going to become responsible citizens. I sit here during the day sometimes and look at these institutional ads run by the American Petroleum Institute, and I want to just pick up the nearest rifle and fill this television full of holes. The lying son of a bitches. Every single ad run by the American Petroleum Institute is a filthy lie designed to put you and me into some altered state of consciousness where we'll say, oh, yeah, wow, man, yeah, they really care. They really do. They care about everything, and they're trying to be green, and they're trying to save the planet. Yeah. Yeah, and every institutional ad from the pharmaceutical industry makes me want to pick up one of my other guns and open fire on the other television. It's time to stop this. There is no question that in a society like ours, there are certain key industries that no more belong in the hands of private corporations than do nuclear weapons. Oh, my God, that's probably next, right? Energy, transportation, health care, socialize it now.
Oh, okay, Mike. We'll have the plan on your desk by noon tomorrow, okay?
yeah, that's the response. Oh, well, what difference does it make at this point, right? $12 billion, one quarter profit, ExxonMobil. Well, everybody in this country below the top 3% of money grubbers, everybody is experiencing it, these price increases at the pump, in the food store, just throughout the economy. And it's going to get worse. and it's going to continue to get worse. This is the ultimate exploitation of resources and labor that corporations or capitalism eventually gets to. There is no check or balance on capitalism. Who does not understand that? It's the golden rule. If you have the gold, you make the rule. Period. Entrepreneurship, small businesses, go for it. It's wonderful. A mixed economy is what we need. We need key industries in this society to be absolutely controlled by government agencies that take the profit motive out, completely out. These are services that people need in order to survive. So who agrees, huh? You agree with me there, Sparky? We have two sound bites from the freak when we come back, and then we'll move on, okay? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M, and I'm serious as a heart attack. Stay.
Gonna be a delicacy. So lift your chops.
If jobs are the most important part of one of my jobs, how do we encourage people to hire more people?
What? You jerk. Oh, my God, this guy. Oh. This is kind of an old topic. You know how rapidly things change. Before I go to the Bush soundbites here, according to the New York Daily News, on Monday... What's today? Thursday. Jesus. Six more major companies have yanked their ads from Michael Savage's filthy talk radio show. This is over his insistence that autistic children are brats and just need to be smacked around a little bit. Home Depot and Sears withdrew their support, along with Direct Buy, Cisco, and Radio Shack. That's according to this organization, Autism United. Insurance giant Aflac was the first company to pull its commercials off the show. Evelyn Ain, president of Autism United, said, quote, "We are going after each and every advertiser that hasn't dropped him yet. We are doing this in all states and really hoping the more people will immediately drop out supporting him. We are going after every angle." Yeah, he called the kids with autism brats, idiots, morons. He said that autism was a fraud and a racket. It's just incredible. So good for corporate America in this regard. Okay, you know, I sit here and rip them new hiney holes on the one hand, but on the other, if Home Depot and Sears, okay, they're okay. Direct Buy. Radio Shack, which is nothing but an outlet for Chinese produced, well, most of these companies are just outlets for Chinese produced junk. Aflac, if these corporations are starting to wake up to the fact that their dollars are supporting a psychopath, a guy who would have had no problem being someone who dropped the cyanide pellets into the sulfuric acid or released the Zyklon B gas into the death chambers at a Nazi death camp, Savage would have done that in an instant. if the people being executed were people that pissed him off. So, good. Good on these corporations for pulling out of this scum suckers program. Now, if they need a place to advertise, I can suggest a fairly good radio show that...
You just have to wonder about a talk show host. I mean, what was he thinking? I mean,
he doesn't think.
Don Imus made some bad choices with awful racist remarks, but making fun of handicapped children. I mean,
Well, that's what right-wing talk show hosts do. Whether they're, you know, anybody. I mean, how many times, and I'm not looking for an answer here, but how many times did you guess that the pig, Rush Limbaugh, has mocked the Americans with Disabilities Act? How many times did he flip his head back and forth like a rag doll in imitating Michael J. Fox's battle with Parkinson's? How many times have these right-wingers mocked, remember when she was Clinton's attorney general, Janet Reno, with her tremors? And you know, these sons of bitches, they don't care about anything. They are like subhuman. And the fact that corporate America continues to sponsor them, Jesus, God! Well, whatever. The karmic whip, the invisible whip, will eventually lop all their heads off. You know that as well as I do. Bush today, he drops into a coal mining town, White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia, attending the annual meeting of the West Virginia Coal Association. And ostensibly there he's there to talk about energy and hydrogen cars and water driblets and you know, all kinds of the kind of gibberish that comes out of his mouth. But first he has to miracle whip today's devastating economic unemployment news about, you know, into some happy talk claptrap about positive growth. He's like Peter Pan, isn't he, in Never Never Land? The rule in the Bush crime syndicate is never, never say recession, no matter what the reality is.
No better group of people to talk about energy with than people who actually take risk to find energy. I'm like you, I'm concerned about the price of gasoline people are paying.
The price?
This is it's a challenging time.
Yeah.
Not the first time we've been through challenging times.
Times?
I might remind you that in the beginning of my presidency, there were some challenging times.
And massive voter fraud, too.
Recession.
Yeah.
And, of course, we got attacked. And yet, with good policy and by trusting the ingenuity and the enterprise of the American people, we came through those times better than before.
Oh,
we'll come,
really?
The same thing's going to happen this time.
Oh, is it? Okay.
It's we got some good news today, encouraging news, not great news, but encouraging news. That in the second quarter, the economy grew at a rate of 1.9%.
Woo!
Now, it's not as good as we'd like it to be, but I want to remind you, a few months ago, there were predictions that the economy would shrink this quarter, not grow. But in fact, the opposite has happened. As a matter of fact, it's more than double the rate we saw in the first quarter. That's positive.
Could any of that growth have anything to do with the massive infusion of taxpayer, what was it called, rebates or advances or whatever? What was it, $60 billion? I forget the number. You think maybe, or maybe it grew because of our weak, crappy dollar, which has foreigners buying up our exports, which doesn't really mean a goddamn thing, Bush, to middle America, working class, middle class. It means nothing. And what about the bad economic data today? The Labor Department reported the number of U.S. workers filing unemployment claims last week was at a five-year high, almost half a million. And that the 1.9 gain that you talked about in growth in the second quarter is going to disappear after this quarter. Because the credit crisis and falling home and stock prices and the high cost of imported oil and the growing trade deficit with China are hammering demand for U.S. goods and services into the ground. and the layoffs continue. You sick son of a bitch. It's one thing to be a liar. That's John McCain. It's something else to be a propagandist. That's Karl Rove. But I'll tell you, it's a third thing to be a complete gibberish-talking idiot like you are and expect people to sit there in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia, and nod their heads and go, yeah, goddamn, he's a great leader, isn't he? Huh? Yeah. Oh, my God. And then Mensa Man talked about the oil crisis we're facing, you know, in light of ExxonMobil's record-setting profits today. Listen as this moron tries to explain supply and demand when he clearly doesn't even have a third grader's understanding of the issue. This is like somebody who's been assigned in Ms. Mumaw's third grade class to do a book report. And the kid reads the book jacket and then writes something up. You can file this entire 60-second clip here in the duh department. Here he is.
We live in an interesting world because a demand for for oil in a remote part of the world affects the gasoline prices right here in West Virginia. Hydrocarbon oil is a commodity, and there are now growing economies like China and India that are demanding
what?
You know, more oil.
Oh,
most Americans, I'm confident, understand that. You know, when the price of crude oil goes up, it drives the price of gasoline. The demand for oil worldwide is outstripping the supply of oil worldwide, which creates pricing pressures.
Ah.
You know, supply and demand works.
Oh, it does?
And so what do you do about it? You know, it's one thing to identify the problem. It's another thing to, you know, do something about it. Well, one thing you do about it is obviously conservation. I mean, when people drive less, it takes pressure off the market.
Yeah, you don't need to get to work.
I happen to believe in the collective wisdom of the American people. And
sure you do.
You can just make your own decision whether or not you want to drive extra or not.
Drive extra? Drive extra or not? What is extra or not? What is drive extra? You're talking to people in West Virginia. What does drive extra mean? And the scariest part of all this is that he's not improvising. He was actually reading from a prepared script, and he still sounds like an idiot. I'm confident, understand that when the price of crude oil goes up, it drives the price of gasoline. My four-year-old grasps that concept better than Bush does. When there are three cookies and 10 kids want them, Molly knows the cookies are more precious than if there were 10 cookies and three kids. Oh, damn. I'll tell you what, let me take a break here because I think I'm going to be sick.
So I've submitted a plan that not only reduces the rate at the bottom, but raises the top rate as well.
Yeah. Sure. And yeah, when we come back after the break at the top of the hour, we're going to talk about what Dick Cheney had in mind to provoke a war with Iran. This son of a bitch needs to be removed from office as quickly as possible. He should be perp walked out of whatever hidey hole he's in, spider hole, Cheney is a madman. He is simply a madman. And if you have any doubts, we'll share that one with you when we come back. A couple emails from Greg in Des Moines writes, Mike, we have a new record American Oil Company profit report. ExxonMobil and its like, with the support of Devil Bush and his like, are killing off the auto industry, the airline industry, the American worker, Iraqis, numerous other world citizens, the polar bear, pristine ecosystems, and the human race via global warming and pollution. WTF? Greg. Eleanor writes regarding the end of predatory capitalism, but Mike, you're talking about genocide, mass murder. Remember, all these corporations now have personhood status. So you just want to cut them out, level them to the ground, chop, 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 a corporate red mist, as it were. But wait, Mike, these are persons, for heaven's sake. We can't just arbitrarily do this to people. Oh, wait. Oh, okay. Yeah, I see. Eleanor. Bill writes, Mike, I think the whole country's with you on nationalizing energy. Christ, it's like the water. It's like air. How do you do it? Can Congress overrule a right-wing Supreme Court on this? I don't think there's anything in the Constitution that has anything whatsoever to do with corporations. Is there? I don't think there is. The idea of granting corporations personhood is relatively late on in the development or devolution of what the founders had in mind for this country. So the Congress can do anything it wants to do, as long as it doesn't violate the Constitution. That's where the Supreme Court steps in. But the Congress of the United States is made up of charlatans, cowards, rat bastards, and freaks. For the most part. Not all. I wonder if the ones who aren't in those any of those categories have the courage to do it. Prairie 2 writes, regarding autism, Mike, autism has reached such a level of epidemic that most, if not all, of the corporate board types have to know someone if they don't have an autistic child in their own extended family, regarding the major corporations who are telling Michael Savage to go pound sand up his ass. Regarding nationalization, Bob writes, Mike, you are right on this. The oil, natural gas, electricity, and healthcare industries are out of control. It is time to nationalize all of these. The greed in this country has taken all of us into financial ruin. The Fed is printing money like a drunken sailor. Our president doesn't give a damn. His retirement is now completely assured, as is Dick Cheney's, and the Democrats don't have a clue about what to do with this mess. They are just as much to blame as the Republicans. Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi are spineless wimps and need to be replaced with someone who has the gall to tell it like it should be. The Democrats want the White House so bad that they won't say anything to upset the apple cart. It's time to turn the apple cart over and get some real leadership. Bob. Not Super Beans Bob, but a different Bob. Hi. What do you think it would take to do what is obviously needed where this economy is concerned? To nationalize health care, energy, and transportation. And you know, as far as the banking industry being nationalized, in, like I said, it already is, except only the half that involves loss, when fraud is perpetrated, when chicanery is afoot, when lies and deceit operate the financial markets, then it is socialized. When the profits are divided, it's privatized. So the banking and financial industry is halfway there already. If this country is to survive, if this society is to survive, the three industries that I mentioned, and possibly the financial services industry, must. If the financial services industry, let's leave that over here for a second. The other three must be nationalized, must be socialized. The financial services industry should have a watchdog organization over it, like the SEC is supposed to be, that has in its restrictive policies the fact that if you violate these laws, you will go to prison. If you are a corporate officer or a shareholder or anyone involved with a financial services company that does to the American people what Enron did, what the SNL debacle did, what the mortgage meltdown is doing. If you are involved in stealing, in flat-out theft from other people, A, B, destruction of their entire goddamn lives, bringing ruin into their families, turning them out on the street, then you, you predatory monster, are going to go to prison. Period. End of story. Now, who has the courage to do that? What lawmaker, what political party, who has the courage to do that? And that's exactly what it's going to take if we're going to survive in a form that means the American dream is still alive. I think we've given it up. I think we've just decided, you know, things have gotten so bad, there's nothing I can do about it. It's been going on for 30 years. I got to stop listening to Malloy. He just bums me out. Let me switch over and listen to Mike Savage while he beats the living Christ out of autistic children, huh? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Regarding the financial services industry, Prairie 2 writes, Mike, the financial services industry is no more legitimate than Amway. Just like you don't need a pyramid scheme to buy soap, you don't need a financial services Ponzi scheme to get the few necessary functions they perform. That was in response, I guess, to my suggestion that financial services industry should be heavily monitored, and when they break the law, send them to jail. Or worse, you know, whatever's fair. Regarding socializing certain industries, the subject line says, who agrees? What sane mind could not agree? This is from Major Malfunction. Oh, my God. Full Metal Jacket, huh? Capitalism has failed this nation and is in the process of cannibalizing itself. End of story. If we the people are going to be forced to socialize private interest risks, we the people are entitled to the profits from our investments. Socialism works. It works for corporations. Let it now work for the people. Yeah, that's the part that is really just infuriating. How long has it been since corporate America really had to stand on its own hind legs? Huh? While it destroys everything that the Constitution of the United States represents, these sons of bitches come whining and wheedling and laughing and snickering every time one of their schemes blows up and you and I have to pay for it. Every single time. John writes, Mike, where I live, the Canadians come down to buy cheap stuff. Can't say that word. To buy cheap stuff costs them half what it does in British Columbia. Remember when we bought our cheap stuff in Mexico? Soon American kids will be running around selling chiclets to rich tourists. John. Oh, my God. And Howard. Mike, it's interesting that corporations are pulling their ads from the Savage program because of offending handicapped children. Was it was it not about a couple of weeks ago that he announced he would be happy to put dynamite in the rear ends of Palestinian babies and kill their mothers too? I didn't hear any corporation pulling out their ads over that. Did you? Howard. No, that was not Michael Wiener Savage. That was Michael Reagan, the stepson of the former president. But it doesn't make any difference. All right-wing talk show hosts are the same. They're evil sons of bitches who have a day of reckoning coming. Seymour Hersh, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist for The New Yorker, was speaking at a journalism conference earlier this month, and in the course of his speech, he revealed that Bush crime family killers held a meeting recently in Dick Cheney's office to discuss ways to provoke a war with Iran. And what did Nancy Pelosi say the other night? If somebody could present evidence to her that a crime was committed, she might consider impeachment. Jesus, God, that woman. I swear. Anyway, in Hersh's most recent article in The New Yorker, he reports that this meeting occurred right after. Remember that incident in the Strait of Hormuz? I'm coming to you. I am coming to you. When a U.S. carrier almost shot at a few Iranian speedboats. Remember that? I am coming to you. According to one of Hersh's sources, and by God, he has sources, the meeting took place in Cheney's office. The subject was how to create a casus belli, a reason for war between Tehran and Washington. That's what they met about. Just like when the events of September 11th, 2001 were simply in the planning stages. Meetings were held, we can be certain, on how to, if not make that happen, how to allow it to happen. You're goddamn right. The 9/11 story put out by the government is nothing but a lie. I don't know what the truth is, but what they put out is hog snot. You know it as well as I do. Hersh explained during the conference, or I should say he explained that during the meeting in Cheney's office, the idea was considered to dress up Navy SEALs, our guys, as Iranians, put them in fake Iranian speedboats, and then shoot at them. Now, who, the Americans who would shoot at the disguised SEALs would have to not be in on the plot, because I don't think American soldiers or American naval personnel would shoot at other American naval personnel. I can't see that happening. I just can't. Or the SEALs would have had to been told all sorts of lies. But as they approached a U.S. naval battle group, surely the U.S. Navy SEALs would have a flash of recognition and say, wait a second, what the hell? So what's the third alternative? Well, which of our allies has ever opened fire deliberately and consciously on an American naval vessel? Huh? I'll give you a minute. Which of our allies, I'll give you a hint, in the Middle East? I'll even tell you the name of the boat. It was the USS Liberty. And it was in the Eastern Mediterranean. Who did that? Who deliberately and consciously opened fire? And as a result, 30-some American military personnel were murdered. You give up? Israel. You're not familiar with the story? Quick, do a Google, USS Liberty. There was a book written about it. The truth of that incident has always been held from the American public. So, one can assume, or I will assume, that Dick Cheney and the murderer sitting with him that Seymour Hersh is reporting on came to the conclusion, well, it's going to be difficult to get American naval ships to open fire on U.S. SEALs, even if they are disguised as Iranians, because the SEALs might somehow signal or transmit the fact that they're really Navy, U.S. Navy personnel. So we've got to have a third party in here. Who can we get to do this? Oh, I know who we could get! The idea intended to provoke this war with Iran that this murderous Dick Cheney wants was ultimately rejected, we suppose. Hersh doesn't know. But here's what Hersh said, quote, "There was a dozen ideas proffered about how to trigger a war. The one that interested me the most was, why don't we in our shipyard, build four or five boats that look like Iranian PT boats, put Navy SEALs on them with a lot of arms, and next time one of our boats goes to the Straits of Hormuz, start a shoot-up. Might cost some lives." And it was rejected because, you know, you can't have Americans killing Americans. That's the kind of, well, that's the level of stuff we're talking about. Provocation. Ultimately, it was rejected. End quote. Now, Hersh argued that one of the things the Bush administration learned during the encounter in the Strait of Hormuz was that if you get the right incident, the American people will support it. Yeah, like, you want another one? Gulf of Tonkin. Huh? How many of you, let me see some hands, I'm old enough, how many remember that? I can remember the night. I'm sitting in Jacksonville, Florida. This is just prior to getting my draft notice. I'm sitting in Jacksonville Beach, Florida, in a little duplex, one half of which I rented with the woman who ultimately I married. And I remember Lyndon Johnson coming on the air and saying, tonight, the North Vietnamese Navy has opened fire in the Gulf of Tonkin on a U.S. military vessel. How many of you remember that? And as a result of those lies, 2.5 million Indochinese, 60,000 Americans dead.
We are living in historic times. We are living in a time of great change. Our leadership and resolve can lighten the way for others. And having come this far, and in the unfolding of the years, this country has a new friend called Vice President Cheney. Dick is a killer. 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 Dick.
Vice President, I've got great confidence in the Vice President, doing a heck of a good job. When I picked him, I knew he was a fine business leader and a fine, experienced man. And that matter will take run its course, the Halliburton investigation.
Yeah, and then we can all go back to the real business of raping America, right, George? Anyway, back to Seymour Hersh, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist for the New Yorker, has revealed that there was a meeting in Cheney's office to discuss ways to provoke a war with Iran. And the one that got the most traction was to dress up American SEALs, U.S. Navy SEALs, like Iranians, put them in an Iranian PT boat, a boat built in America that looked like an Iranian PT boat, and then open fire on them. Now, this is similar, only smaller in scope, although the results would have been probably just as horrific, to Operation Northwoods. That was presented to John Kennedy by the chairman, well, all the members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff back in the early 60s. If you're not familiar with that, you should be. You really should be. Operation Northwoods. It was the template from which the plan to allow America to be attacked on September 11, 2001 was drawn. You don't think so? Look at Operation Northwoods. One word, Northwoods. Just check it out in your spare time, okay? Anyway, the reason the idea was turned down ultimately was because somebody in Cheney's office at this meeting not reported to be Cheney, brought up the idea you can't have Americans killing Americans. I'm sure Cheney just looked at that person and said, why not? Anyway, Hirsch, at the speech in New York, a Campus Progress Journalism Conference, Hirsch argued that one of the things the Bush administration learned during that phony encounter in the Strait of Hormuz, I'm coming to you, was that, as I mentioned before the break, if you get the right incident, the American public will support it. Hirsch said, quote, look, is it high school? Yeah. Are we playing high school with, 5,000 nuclear warheads in our arsenal? Yeah, we are. We're playing, Who's the first guy to run off the highway with us in Iran? End quote, Hirsch. Yeah, that was, when I was a kid, that was called a chicky run. Remember that? Let's play chicken. All right, now here's the whole thing that Hirsch said. Let me give it to you all at once. Quote, there was a meeting. Among the items considered and rejected, which is why the New Yorker did not publish it on grounds that it wasn't accepted, one of the items was, why not? Well, there was a dozen ideas proffered about how to trigger a war. The one that interested me the most was, why don't we in our shipyard, build four or five boats that look like Iranian PT boats, put Navy SEALs on them with a lot of arms, and next time one of our boats goes to the Strait of Hormuz, start a shoot-up. Might cost some lives, but it was rejected because, you can't have Americans killing Americans. That's the kind of, that's a level of stuff we're talking about, provocation. But it was rejected. So I can understand the argument for not writing something that was rejected, maybe. My attitude always towards editors is that they're mice training to be rats. But the point is, Jay June, if you know what that means, silly, maybe, but potentially very lethal, because one of the things they learned in the incident was the American public, if you get the right incident, the American public will support bang, bang, kiss, kiss. We're into it. What happened in the Gulf was, or in the Straits in early January, the president was just about to go to the Middle East for a visit. So that was one reason they wanted to gin it up, get it going. Look, is it high school? Yeah. Are we playing high school with, 5,000 nuclear warheads in our arsenal? Yeah, we are. We're playing, Who's the first guy to run off the highway, us or Iran? It's astonishing stuff. I can't, as much as I know everything about this filthy Bush crime family, it's almost impossible for me, just me, Citizen Mike, how about you, Citizen whoever you are, how do you get your mind around this stuff? How do you get your mind around how Bush has destroyed the economy? How Bush has enabled predatory capitalism to just run off its leash and just biting and snarling and devouring everything in its path? How do you get your mind around the fact that they lied us into a war? Jesus Christ, lied us into a war. How do you get your mind around the fact that they want to set up an incident to take us into another war? How do you get your mind around the fact that at the very least they ignored intelligence that said Osama bin Laden determined to strike in the U.S.? How do you do that? I can't do it anymore. I can't contain those thoughts. I go berserk, absolutely berserk. Do you think President Obama is going to assist in bringing these people to justice? Huh? Do you? You think? Stay with me, okay? I need some support tonight. Oh, God. We all need some support. Stick around. Quick break. Okay, not so quick, but we'll be back. I'm Mike Mullet. This is Nova M Radio.
White as the snow that falls in Wyoming. With me, your vote won't make history. Who's looking older than George's father?
Everyone knows it's Cheney. With Cheney, I could go far.
You better learn CPR.
'Cause Cheney's heart is subpar. Don't die on me.
I'm your VP.
Don't die on me. Oh, clear! Who's just another middle-aged white?
world. Sometimes things aren't exactly black and white when it comes to accounting procedures.
Yeah. Yeah, that sure is the truth, isn't it, Chuckle Nuts? Oh, God damn. Superbeans.com, Bob, sent me an email here. This is from the New York Times 2 years ago. And listen to the comparison between what I'm about to share with you and what Seymour Hersh says that Cheney was trying to do. During a private tour, this is in the New York Times on March 27, 2006. During a private two-hour meeting in the Oval Office on January 31, 2003, Bush made clear to Prime Minister Tony Blair of Britain that he was determined to invade Iraq without the second congressional resolution, or even if international arms inspectors failed to find unconventional weapons. According to a confidential memo about the meeting written by Mr. Blair's top foreign policy advisor and reviewed by the New York Times. Let me digress. This is the infamous Downing Street memo. Back to the Times. The memo also shows that the president and the prime minister acknowledged that no unconventional weapons had been found inside Iraq. Faced with the possibility of not finding any before the planned invasion, Mr. Bush talked about several ways to provoke a confrontation, including a proposal to paint a United States surveillance plane in the colors of the United Nations in hopes of drawing fire. And Nancy Pelosi, thanks, Bob. Nancy Pelosi says on The View that maybe she would have considered impeachment. She would have considered impeachment if someone had presented to her evidence of a crime being committed. What in the hell do you call this? Conspiracy inside the Oval Office, inside Cheney's office. And this is the part that has leaked out. The Downing Street memo has been out there for two, three years now. And Nancy Pelosi, who holds the key, refuses. Nancy Pelosi is a co-conspirator. She is a war criminal. We proved at Nuremberg that the co-conspirators were equally guilty. Nancy Pelosi is a co-conspirator in every single killing, every single act of torture, every single violation of the U.S. Constitution by these thugs. Nancy Pelosi is equally guilty. If I sit in the car while you go rob a 7-Eleven and kill the clerk, and you jump in the car and off we go, I am equally guilty. People in San Francisco who have sent Nancy Pelosi to the U.S. House, are you going to do it again? In light of what you know, in light of what you have witnessed, are you going to do it again? According to the Brennan Center for Justice, which is located at New York University Law School, a district court in Washington, D.C. today ruled that former White House counsel Harriet Myers and White House Chief of Staff Joshua Bolton must cooperate with the House Judiciary Committee investigation, which is exploring the political misconduct that these two helped engineer in the Justice Department. So a district court has ruled that. Now, you know it's going to be appealed. And if the Supreme Court, staffed with right-wing fascists, if the Supreme Court does its job, they will either delay hearing this until Bush is out of office. The Supreme Court goes back into session the first Monday in October. Or they'll set it for the next year's calendar, or they'll ignore it. Now, according to the Brennan Center for Justice, this opinion is a setback, I would think so, for the Bush administration. The Bush argued that executive privilege absolutely immunized White House advisors from congressional subpoena power. The judge, the chief judge, I believe, in the district, wrote, Judge Bates, wrote in his opinion today, quote, "The executive's current claim of absolute immunity from compelled congressional process for senior presidential aides is without support in the case law," end quote. And an attorney for the Brennan Center for Justice added, quote, "Despite the Bush administration's view, the president is not above the law, nor are his advisors. Today's opinion affirms fundamental ideas about the limits of executive power within our constitutional system," end quote. Now, here's the interesting part. The Brennan Center for Justice, as part of a bipartisan coalition, submitted a joint amicus brief in support of the House Judiciary Committee and its authority to compel testimony from Myers and Bolton when this went before the judges. Who else was in the coalition? Well, it was the Brennan Center for Justice, the Rutherford Institute. Remember them? The ones that were willing to take on the Paula Jones case gratis. Judicial Watch. Remember that? Larry Klayman, the right-wing nutball who worked very closely with Bob Barr to provide as much information as they possibly could to impeach Bill Clinton for lying and obstructing the justice required to find out if Monica really did him or if not. Remember all that? And the fourth part of this bipartisan coalition is CREW, C-R-E-W. Which is a liberal advocacy a watchdog group in D.C. So the idea that the Brennan Center for Justice, Judicial Watch, the Rutherford Institute, and CREW filed or submitted this joint amicus brief in amicus brief in support of the Judiciary Committee's insistence that these bastards appear is interesting, to say the least. Now, according to the Brennan Center for Justice, Judge Bates' opinion pertains solely to the conflict between Myers and Bolton in the House Judiciary Committee, but nonetheless has wider implications, notably for Karl Rove, who advanced similar claims of executive privilege and then split the country when called by the same committee to testify about possible politicization of prosecutors within the Department of Justice. And you'll remember now, how is this tied together? Well, once again, Nancy Pelosi, the gatekeeper for this fascist bunch of pigs, the Bush crime family, Nancy Pelosi holds the key. Because last week, the House Judiciary Committee recommended contempt charges against Rove in connection with his refusal to testify. Remember? The full House has not yet acted on the recommendation because Nancy Pelosi will not allow the recommended contempt charge to go before the full House. She will not allow it. Nancy Pelosi is a co-conspirator. Moving on. Got some stuff here on McCain. But Glenn Beck, another animalistic right-winger. This guy is amazing to me. He, because of, first of all, his bigotry, his idiocy, his approach to all the subjects. And this guy is really squirmy. I mean, he's not a right up front psychopath like Savage. He's not a right up front shill of corporate America like Rush Limbaugh. And he's not a right up front butt boy for Rush Limbaugh like Sean Hannity is. Glenn Beck fits into his own category. I think this guy just reeks of the banality of evil. Have you ever watched him on CNN headlines? If you haven't, you should. This is the guy that Hannah Arendt was a type that Hannah Arendt was referring to when she wrote about, where concerned Adolf Eichmann, the banality of evil. The banality of evil. Listen, just watch one of Glenn Beck's programs one time. Well, on Tuesday this week, the U.S. House passed a formal apology for slavery and racist segregation laws. And in their resolution, the House recognized that, quote, African Americans continue to suffer from the consequences of slavery and Jim Crow, end quote. You know, you and I have talked about this before on this program. The inability to build family wealth for 300 years that was denied Americans of African descent. So that the biggest asset most American African-American families ever can put together, most African-American families, is their house, which has now been taken from them because of the chicanery and trickery and ugliness used to convince them to take second and third mortgages. So the House tries to pass a resolution that, okay, we apologize. Why should the House apologize? Why should there be any apology? You know, the white people that say, well, I didn't own slaves. I didn't have anything to do with this. That's such a fakey, false, idiotic argument. I'll tell you why when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy, Nova M.
Based upon how we're doing business and how we're operating, over and above just sort of the normal by-the-books auditing arrangement.
Yeah. What a monster. What an absolute monster. Back to Glenn Beck, this walking example of banality of evil that Hannah Arendt wrote about. The context is the House passed a formal apology for slavery this week and for racist segregation laws. And in their resolution, they recognize that, quote, African Americans continue to suffer from the consequences of slavery and Jim Crow, end quote. And yesterday, Beck spent nearly 30 minutes, according to, what is this, Media Matters? I've got this linked at my website so you can pick it up tonight. Anyway, Beck spent nearly 30 minutes on his radio show, mocking the apology. And then he continued with this asinine performance on his CNN headline news show last night during a discussion with Ron Paul, the Libertarian candidate. Paul wondered why Congress should apologize since, quote, we personally weren't responsible, end quote. Do I have to explain something to the brilliant Ron Paul? This was a government-supported, sanctioned, invented process. Slavery and segregation laws. Who is the government, Ron? According to libertarians, according to all the principles set down, we live in a place that attempted at one time self-government. Ron, what that means is we are the government. You know that line that says government of, by, and for the people shall not perish. Do you remember that, Ron? Come on, libertarian, you know the Constitution. You're right out there defending it, dude, right? Institutional racism, institutionalized slavery, institutionalized anything is the responsibility of whomever it is or whatever group it is that set up the institution. Jesus, what is wrong with these people? So an apology is appropriate. You know what would be more appropriate? Reparations. Do you know why that will never happen? Because Bush has bankrupted the country. That's why. Now, Beck, that was what Ron Paul said. That's bad enough. But this halfwit, Glenn Beck, claimed that the apology by the House, his words, was a front to the principles of Christianity. What? Here was the dialogue. Ron Paul. But when it comes to these apologies, you know, why should you and I make the apologies? Why should I apologize for you through a vote in the Congress? At the same time, you know, we personally weren't responsible, you know, for that. And then Beck says, yes, I think it, honestly, it is a front. I'm a Christian. It's a front, whatever the hell that means, to the principles of Christianity. Forgiveness, forgiveness. This country, half this country fought the other half and died to free and to say enough. This is wrong. We were washed in blood. I know. I mean, good heavens, there's nothing worse than slavery. Why are we doing this and concentrating on this now? Oh, my God. Can anyone translate that for me? I don't speak moron. What does that mean? Yes, I think it, honestly, it is a front. I'm a Christian. It's a front to the principles of Christianity. Forgiveness, forgiveness. This country, half this country fought the other half and died to free and to say enough. This is wrong. We were washed in blood. I know. I mean, good heavens. There's nothing worse than slavery. Why are we doing this and concentrating on this now? What does that mean? It means nothing. But CNN and all the advertisers that appear on CNN support this evil little turd and his discussions about how somehow apologizing for slavery is affront. Does he mean an affront to Christianity? What part, Glenn? The part that ordered slaves to honor their masters and to shut up and sit quietly because that's how God wanted it to be? Is that the part you're referring to, you goddamn drunk? Is that the part? It's affront to Christianity, as Beck would say it. It just never stops, does it? So to CNN headline news, shame on you. Shame on you. Of course, so many people wrote you and told you a couple of years ago when you gave this evil twit a program not to do it. We said shame on you back then. But CNN headline news, they don't care. Give him a program. The banality of evil. Glenn Beck defines it. Evil on the scale of Adolf Eichmann? No, of course not. But only because he hasn't had the opportunity. Evil on the scale of, like most of these talk television and talk radio right-wing hosts, evil on the scale of a playground bully. Well, I can beat up on Muslims. I can beat up on autistic children. I can beat up on people with Parkinson's disease. I can beat up on resolutions in Congress that ask forgiveness. I'm a big man on the circuit here. I'm a BMOC. I'm a big man on TV and radio and everything like that. I guess I should put his name on my list of people that I want to have a chat with when the lights go out. We'll be back after the break. A couple of quick things when we come back, and then we're going to take your phone calls if you want to check in. Huh? 800-989-1480. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon you now. Realize.
Welcome back. Seven past the hour. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for sticking around. The other story that just really blew me away today, McCain's campaign is accusing Barack Obama of playing the race card. Jesus, God. You know, how to phrase this? There is nothing stupider than a middle-aged or older white man trying to make a statement about somebody else playing a race card and using an example that shows that the stupid-ass white man making the comment is the one being the racist. How can white people be this dumb? Well, regarding race, it's very simple. Answer my own question. White people don't have a clue about how black people operate. Now, you're going to say, well, Mike, you're just racially generalizing white people, black people. Yeah, you're goddamn right. I know what I'm talking about. Just get out of town, okay? White people don't have a clue where it concerns black folks' consciousness about white people. And that's for the obvious reasons. White people have never had to have a clue. It's been the other way. Black people, from day one, trying to figure out the white man. Why? Because their life depended on it. So, McCain's campaign is accusing Barack Obama of playing the race card, citing his remarks, Obama's remarks, that Republicans would try to scare voters by pointing out that he, Obama, quote, doesn't look like all those other presidents on the dollar bills, unquote. Oh, Jesus, God, that's playing a race card! Rick Davis, McCain's campaign manager, said in a statement, quote, Barack Obama has now played the race card, and he played it from the bottom of the deck. It's divisive, negative, shameful, and wrong. End quote. Oh, you half-ass. My God. Barack Obama states what has obviously been the subtext of this, and this is something that just, it hasn't come out yet. It's, you know, not directly. Oh, Bill Clinton brought it up a couple of times. Hillary Clinton referred to it obliquely as a result of certain kinds of questions put to her by white questioners back during the primary season. The McCain campaign has been drifting that way more and more because the McCain campaign understands one visceral truth. They don't have a chance. They are out of this race. So what's left? Well, the Bush crime family scared us with the Muslims. The McCain crime family would like to scare us with the Negroes. You understand how simple it is? Watch out for that Barack Obama. Hey, be careful. You know, he's, how can I say this? He is a, how do they refer to each other in the rap songs? You know what I'm saying? Yes, well, he's one of them. So, white America, be careful, be careful, be careful, be careful. Look what happened to Hillary. My good friend Hillary Clinton, look what happened to her. Be careful, be careful. Do you really want, one of them for president? Do you really, really, really want one of them for president? Do you really want one of them for president? So when Barack Obama calls them on this, catches them by their short hairs, drags them upside down, naked on a stage, and says, look, what the McCain campaign is doing. How does the McCain campaign respond? Oh, he's playing the race card! On Wednesday, Obama said in Springfield, Missouri, quote, so nobody really thinks that Bush or McCain have a real answer for the challenges we face. So what they're going to try to do is make you scared of me. You know, he's not patriotic enough. He's got a funny name. You know, he doesn't look like all those other presidents on those dollar bills. You know, he's risky. That's essentially the argument they're making. End quote. So right away, the Bush thug, Rick Davis, jumps off. Oh, hey, look, look here, look here. Let's say that's the race card, because you know what? There are so many white Americans who are just dumber than hog snot, and they're going to go, yup, 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 he played the race card. Yup, 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 he played the race card. Yup, 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 played the race card. Yup, 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 yup. McCain said today that he agrees with his campaign manager, Rick Davis. I agree with it, my friends, and I'm disappointed, my friends, that Senator Obama, my friends, would say the things he's saying, my friends. Jesus Christ. Oh, and by the way, of course, by making the accusation that Obama's playing the race card, according to Michael Cooper and Michael Powell, writing at the New York Times political blog, by making that accusation, the race card accusation, McCain's campaign was itself explicitly injecting race into its campaign against the first black man ever to become a major party's presidential nominee. But the average white person, you see, the average Caucasian is not going to understand that. You know why? Because white America is used to listening to white voices. White America is not used to listening to black voices unless they're making music. Yeah, I love that music, James Brown. Yeah, damn right, I love that. Here, give me another beer. Or unless they're talking sports, except for golf and tennis. How did those two sisters, I mean, come on. And Tiger Woods, what's up with that? What is he? His mother is a what? Really? Oh, well, okay. White America is not used to listening to black America about anything. That's not what we do. We tell black America. We don't listen. Black America, get over here. Yes? Listen to me. Okay. What? But all of a sudden, a lot of white people are looking around going, uh-oh. Barack Obama? He going to be president? So McCain, the McCain campaign injects race. Now, this is really interesting, because this filth that the McCain campaign is flopping around like something out of a dumpster. It comes just as McCain is scheduled tomorrow in Orlando to give an address to the National Urban League. The National Urban League. You Caucasians know what that is? You know what the National Urban League is? Those are some of them, uppity middle-class Negroes. Ha ha, yeah. Ain't none of the NAACP, man. This is the National Urban League. You got bankers and doctors in there. This is insanity, isn't it? It's just insanity. Why do I go nuts on this program? Because it's insanity. Because if I try to address this stuff head on, up front, straight ahead, like, say, Tom Hartman would do it, and I have deep respect for him because he can do it, I can't. I've got to play the fool. I've got to get insane. I've got to yell and scream and use nasty language, because this stuff drives me berserk. Doesn't it you? Oh, my. Can you stretch 1 minute here for me? All right. Because this is from a listener in Forest Grove, Oregon. I just wanted to share this with you. John, I believe it's John. He writes, Mike, this is regarding what I said the other night about Barack Obama is no more of a liberal than I'm a Nazi. And John writes in, Mike, you're the only talk radio host I've heard yet who understands that Obama has been fully vetted by Wall Street and the war industry. Lots of progressives who have read Thomas Frank's excellent book, What's the Matter with Kansas, and sagely nodded their heads in agreement, have failed to see that its mirror image applies as well. How many Air America hosts have I heard say, well, first we have to get Obama elected, then we can push him to yada, yada, yada. One of those Air America talk show hosts says this about every 10 minutes. Gullible liberals say, well, Obama may have said, insert the anti-progressive position here, like voting for FISA, but he has to win the general election first. After he's elected, he'll insert silly liberal pipe dream here. The truth is, John writes, that progressives serve the same function in the Democratic Party that the Christian right serves in the Republican Party. A dependable source of money and votes, but never taken seriously in policy decisions. Never. Obama has already been designated as the next president by the people who decide these things. It's not that our votes won't be counted, it's that they simply don't matter. I'll just vote for McKinney, or ride in Kucinich, and see you in the streets. John, Forest Grove, Oregon.
Paradise, he taught me paradise is in your mind. You know that there's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better think.
Let's see. There I was sitting around the leader with the table with foreign leaders, looking at Colin Powell and Condi Rice. Yeah.
Yeah, and I said, "See, I've got a couple in my cabinet." I'm such a racial equalist. All right, the phone number here is 800-989-1480. Brennan is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Brennan, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you. You know, geez, I don't know where to start. Mike, man, you're going in the right direction here.
Yeah.
I know socialism is a bad word, but... Brother, I mean, look at it this way. This is our world. Who is it we're trying to charge each other for?
Go ahead, answer it yourself.
Well, I mean, it's no one. It's us. I mean, why? I understand this. I mean, God, 95% of the wealth goes to 5% of the population.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something we really voted on? Is that something as we as a democracy really decided, oh, yeah, that's okay?
Yeah, it's
insane. Let me put it this way. What is our strength as a species? Is it cooperation or is it competition?
Well, it depends on what worldview you want to look at. I would say cooperation, but Darwin said it's competition.
Well, yeah, you know what, but Darwin had a limited view of things, and that was a long time ago. We've gone a long, long way since then. Do you realize that economic textbooks...
No, wait a second. I wasn't criticizing Darwin. I was just making a point.
I know, but I want to expand upon that.
Sure, go ahead.
Do you realize that economic textbooks were silently changed in the 70s to say... Well, it's not a lack of resources, it's lack of production. Well, we don't have, do you understand the fundamental aspect of supply and demand is supposed to be lack of resources, lack of raw, like there's three of us and there's only two to go around. So we'll bid on what is. But if that isn't true, if there is enough to go around, why are we bidding on it?
I'm not sure, Brennan. I get what you're saying, but I just wonder if there's some way that you could, some way that maybe you could not drag out your vowels like that, because it really comes across the radio as irritating. But I get your point, Brennan, sure. I think. I'm not sure what your point was, but, you know, please, next time you call the program, don't drag out your vowels like that, because it just is really kind of weird.
I was going to call the talk show, but then I got high.
No, Brennan isn't high. Judy is calling from California, listening on KTLK. I thought KTLK got bumped off the air in the past hour. Hasn't it, Judy, or is it back on?
No, I'm on hold on the phone, so I turned the radio off so I can listen to it.
Yeah, I got a bunch of emails from people that said they were listening to KTLK and it went to static. Are you all having another earthquake or bad storms?
No, we're fine. But that was a pretty good joke. It woke us up a little bit out here.
Yeah.
I have 2 points.
Okay.
First of all, we have to have Cheney stop listening to old movies. Because that plot that he wanted to do against Iran, that was an old movie plot that was with Richard Widmark way back in 1953. I'm dating myself, but I can't help it. And so he had banned him from doing that. He can't watch movies anymore.
What was the movie?
I can't remember the name. All I remember, it was he was an old submarine guy from World War II,
yeah.
And a bunch of scientists, and they went out to this island, and they were going to docker up a plane to look like the United Nations, and they had put an atom bomb in there, and they were going to... a bomb, I think South Korea, this is the North Koreans, or something like that. It was
hey, Judy, can yeah. I get you a hold on? I got to do a break here. Just stay right there. I'll come back and pick you up on the other side of the break. Just stay right there. Stay right there. Don't go away. You stay there, too, please. This is Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Malloy.
That fish and humans can coexist peacefully. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It is about 25 and a half minutes before the hour. We're talking with Judy in California, listening on KTLK. Hey, we did some quick research. I think the movie you're talking about was the old Richard Widmark movie, Hell and High Water.
That's it. You're right. Very, very good. The whole plot, I mean, the whole thing, if you watched it, it was on cable not too long ago, and I go... Boy, I mean, when you were describing Chase, God, that sounds familiar.
Oh, man.
I know. They just stole it from the movie, but he can't watch old movies. We have to ban him from that. And another point I want to make is about Pelosi. I don't live in San Francisco area, but if I did, she wouldn't get my vote.
Mm.
If she doesn't realize that we have to bring these people to be accountable, I mean, our whole justice system is down the tubes. Anybody who commits a crime, they say, well, the government did it. I mean, sure. I mean, it's amazing to me how I'm just so frustrated.
Well, you know, cite an example of what you just said. This genocidal freak in Sudan who has caused all the murder and mayhem and death and destruction in the Darfur in the south of that country. You know, there was a warrant or whatever it is issued the other day by the whatever it's called.
The World Court?
I think the World Court or the...
well, I know what you mean.
What's the one in The Hague?
The same one that had
Milosevic.
Milosevic.
Anyway, the quick defense from this guy is that the Americans do this sort of thing. So why should he be held responsible?
Exactly.
Now, I'm totally paraphrasing,
right.
But this is what George Bush, this is also part of his legacy. When the United States, subsequent to 9/11, to the attack on this country, engineered to some degree by the Bush crime family, when we went to the suspension of human rights, the use of torture, so on and so forth, the crackdown on civil liberties, all in the name of fighting terrorism, there were probably 50 governments, repressive as they were already, who use that as their model. This is what George Bush has done. He has increased fear on this planet. He's decreased the move towards human rights. He has increased murder and mayhem. I mean, the legacy of this guy is astonishing. And you know what's really, really weird is I don't think he even understands, Judy, the place he's taken this country. He's not that bright.
No, he isn't. And another thing is, when I look at Obama, I see a wonderful, articulate, savvy person. He has flaws. They all have flaws. And you have to, you know, I know you're saying, well, you know, he's going to, you have, but you know what? You're going to, I just hope he gets in, and then we're going to have to just hold his feet to the fire and just make sure. Look, when Roosevelt was elected, he was not a progressive. He was a conservative, and the people demanded and held his feet to the fire and made sure that he did things for the people, and that's what we have to do with Obama.
Well, Judy, I talked about that with somebody last night at length. I wish I could agree with you on that, but we can agree to disagree.
Exactly.
Agreeably. But,
yes, I agree with you. And I love your show, and I listen all the time.
Well, thanks, Judy. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your comments tonight. Take care. Take care. Billy Bob is calling from Tennessee, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Billy Bob?
Yeah, how you doing, Mike? It's been a long time, man.
Yeah, it has. I'm gonna talk like George Bush here for just a minute.
Yeah, talk like George Bush. It sounds real dumb. Like
I know. Well, that's what I mean. I'm just going to talk dumb. How you doing, Billy Bob?
Pretty good, man.
Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah, it has been a long time. What you got on your mind?
Yeah, I got you on my radio station live on cam here on nowlive.com.
Oh, yeah?
Mount Train Radio.
I'll be darned.
Check it out sometime.
All right, what is it? What is it?
Mountain Train Radio on nowlive.com.
Oh, okay.
Just go look for scheduling, and you can find me down there somewhere. I think, I'm on Pacific time.
Yeah.
But I'm on this time, so I'm 3 hours behind time or 3 hours ahead time somewhere. I don't know.
Somewhere. It doesn't matter, Billy Bob. It just doesn't matter.
It don't matter.
All right.
I had a point, though.
Yeah,
I was talking about this Black Alliance.
Black Alliance. Now, what's
Black
that?
Black Alliance. I don't know if you've ever heard of that or not.
I don't think I may have. It doesn't ring a bell. What is it?
Okay. The Pope has got, there's a 12-member panel called the Black Pope and His People that the Vatican's got, which is basically the Vatican's hit squad, sort of like our CIA. Most people don't know that.
Now, wait a minute.
Yes.
The Pope has a hit squad?
Well, they go out and do dirty work that the Pope don't know about, or they don't let him know.
Okay. And these are black folks?
No, it's called the Black Alliance.
Oh, you mean the color black?
They're aligned with
evil.
Dark, yes. Evil,
I got
evil.
You. Okay.
In, England.
No, Black Alliance, that's a new one on me, Billy Bob. I have a lot of problems with the positions of the Catholic Church over the past, 2,000 years, but I've never heard of the Black Alliance.
Yeah, it's an organization that behind the scenes of people that take care of the Vatican, and if anybody gets
out of it. Well, what have they done now? You're bringing them up for some reason. What have they done?
Oh, well, this is part of the Queen of England, there's certain elements in our society, certain bank owners that own basically this world. And George Bush's family dates back further than you think. His family.
All right, now wait, Billy. Wait a minute. I had somebody talking about this on the air the other night. I think it was the Coast Guard lieutenant who brought up basically the same stuff. I got to ask you because we're running out of time. Where are you going with this?
Oh, well, I'm just going to the people need to know that there's a lot more behind the scenes than they think.
And well, I think I think
you're back the way it was. Or my forefathers didn't want this myth.
Well, I think a lot of people understand that without knowing perhaps all these sordid, nasty details that stretch back over a couple of centuries. I think most of us who are not aware of that still recognize, Billy Bob, that this guy is a freak. Everybody around him is a freak. His family are freaks. Everything about them, there's something poisonous in their DNA. And everybody that they surround themselves with also has poisonous DNA. I'm surprised that when Bush walks down the hallway somewhere, or Cheney or Gonzalez or the rest of these people over the course of the last 7-8 years, that they don't leave a trail of radioactive slime behind them. It's just, you know, yeah, they're bad folks. But Billy Bob, listen, thanks, man. I got to move on. I appreciate what you had to say. Monica is calling from Dallas. Is it Monica?
It's Annika.
Annika. Hey, Annika, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Hey, Annika, what's going on?
How's it going? First of all, I want to say that you're just a great guy. I mean, you're doing a lot of really good work here, and that I totally agree with everything you say.
Uh-oh.
Everything.
Now, be careful of that.
No, I'm telling the truth. All right, I'm going to tell you what really people don't understand. All right, we got a lot of talk going on now about all the bad things going on, but nobody's doing nothing. And it kind of reminds me of Nazi Germany. You know, they saw, they disagreed with it, but they did nothing.
You're right.
You know, we got a lot of things going on. We got, you know, violations against the Geneva Convention,
mm-hmm.
things that you talked about, and I completely agree that, you know, these are things that need very much to be intensely looked into and taken care of. I mean, these are people... These are human beings, and we're just like Nazi Germany. You know, people don't realize that. And, you know, I've tried on the Internet to make people understand where a lot of these WMDs and what have you came from. Actually, I have a definition on Urban Dictionary about Ronald Reagan. And I've had numerous people giving me a lot of guff about what I said about Ronald Reagan, you know, giving, you know, WMDs to the... And essentially, there was a whole scandal about that, but everyone wants to ignore the fact that all this WMD talk got started with the right wingers, with that crowd. As a matter of fact, if you go there and if you look up the definition under a Nitquist for Ronald Reagan, you know, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well,
and I just want to say that you know, it's really important that people understand that. Everything that I talk about, you know, and everything you talk about is not just talk. These are facts. These are things that are going on. And what really kills me is the fact that these guys can operate with complete immunity. They can do whatever they want, and they are not going to be prosecuted. And
well, that's the part that's very frustrating to everybody, Annika, is that they do what they do without any accountability. I hear you loud and clear. Thanks. Appreciate you checking in, Annika. Rush is calling from Dallas, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Rush, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me on your show.
I love
listening to you, man. Just like the other caller said, I agree with you 100% on everything you say, man.
I don't think that's a good idea. I don't even agree with me 100% of the time.
Well, let's just say 95% of the time then.
How about maybe 80 or 62 or?
I'll come down to 90%.
Okay, all right. Well, bring it down a little bit. Anyway, why you called Rush is.
Wait a minute.
I got to put you on hold. I got to do a break here, and then we'll come back after the break. And if you can be real fast, because we're just about out of time. All right. All right. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Ten before the hour, thanks to our usual gang of miscreants, bandits, and people who would subvert your mind to put this program on the air. That would include Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Sharon Gordy, And Catherine Bay, who produces all this. All right, back to your phone calls. We were getting ready to talk with Rush, who is listening in Dallas on Sirius Satellite Radio. All right, Rush, where were we?
Yeah, I was just trying to we went on break. Actually, I just wanted to comment on how John McCain is trying to inject race into this election. You know, he tried to kind of come up with the issue of race by raising the affirmative action thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And that kind of never worked for him because Obama said, you know, I'm with you on that one. We should reverse the laws on affirmative action. Right. And, you know, McCain kind of scratched his
head. Wait. I don't think Obama said that. I think what he said was that affirmative action is not a bad thing, but it should include so-called disadvantaged whites. So Obama, be careful now. Obama never said that affirmative action should be reversed. He just didn't say that.
Okay, I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
I'm getting my news from somewhere. You know, he could not beat him on that issue. You know, Jesse Helms of, I guess, North Carolina was just kind of used that quite often, you know, during his campaigns over there. And it was pretty successful for him, you know, trying to raise that, you know. It's a good way to inject race into something, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And, you know, I just kind of see this election as John McCain is kind of desperate because he ran 2000, mm-hmm. you know, and this pretty much is his last time, you know. I mean, he can't come back for another campaign, I guess, because he's too old.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I just don't think, I just don't like the way Obama is running this, his campaign, because he's just been nice, man. You know,
well, but I think Barack Obama understands something very essential, Rush, to where the American public is, and that is we are sick to our guts of the negative campaigning. And I don't know if you remember, was it the Thrilla in Manila when Muhammad Ali allowed. Who was his opponent? Damn. It was the first time he used the rope-a-dope trick. Was it Foreman? I forget. No, it wasn't. Who was it? Oh, well, doesn't matter. Don't email me! But it was a championship fight, I believe, and Ali used the trick of allowing the guy he was fighting to just, it appeared to the audience, just whip Ali's ass. Just, I mean, pummeled him. And what Ali was doing was he was taking some punishment, yes, but he was just waiting, just holding back, rope-a-dope. At the last minute, just beat the guy's ass almost unconscious. So I have a feeling, perhaps, that Barack Obama is using the political equivalent of rope-a-dope. He's allowing McCain, and by allowing, I mean he's not responding the way he, maybe the way you feel he should, Rush, but... I have to say, man, it's difficult for me to say your name. No offense, but whew. Obama is doing what I think it makes great sense. He's allowing McCain. He's standing back and letting McCain just continue to gut himself. You know, every day McCain takes another shot right between his own eyes. It's incredible. I don't know why the guy is still standing. He's already shot himself in the head, what, 6 times? It just keeps going on. This is amazing. This is the man who won't die. He just keeps shooting himself in the head over and over and over again. So I think, with all this garbagey, negative crap like today, Obama played the race card. Oh my God! Obama would rather win an election, or would rather lose a war than win an election. Jesus! I mean, everybody sees through this. Everybody who has a sense that of sack full of brass doorknobs, we understand what's going on here. I wouldn't worry about Obama. Obama has more common sense and intelligence in his left pinky than McCain has accumulated in 71 years on the planet. McCain is a fool. He's a jerk. He's a former terrorist who tried to go straight by marrying a rich woman after he walked away from his damaged wife. He makes no sense. He's no more going to be president than I'm going to be the head of the Southern Company. Oh, God. So don't worry about it. All right, Rush. Oh, that's hard for me to say. I'll just pretend like you're the band, not the neo-Nazi talk host. All right, we got time for another call. All right, let's talk with Diane in Laguna Beach, listening to XM. Hey, Diane.
Hey, Mike. I have to breathe.
Yeah, I hear that. Yeah,
I get so outraged. Okay, I want to do something, and I don't know if you read Glenn Greenwald, but he has a great piece. And perhaps you read it. I don't get to listen every night, but. July 29th, it's at Common Dreams. Let's give Blue Dogs the boot. Pushing conservative Democrats out of Congress could help the party stand up to the GOP.
Yeah, I haven't read that yet, but I definitely will. Yeah.
I hope you will, and I totally agree. I don't even care if Nancy Pelosi loses to a Republican. I want her to lose. He points out that we have enough padding in the House that we should strategize and really put the fear of God into these blue dogs and these corporate Democrats. So we lose a few, you know?
Mm-hmm.
At least
oh, I
it'll
agree.
Make them stand up and listen. And, I mean, he has it's called Blue America PAC, and they put money into television ads that put the pressure on these Democrats. And I think that's what, I mean, I don't give any more money to Obama. I only give money to media, you know.
All right. Hey, Diane, listen, I hate to do this, but, man, I let the clock get past me. We are flat out of time.
Okay, thanks,
I'll tell you what, call in tomorrow and we'll talk. I'll see you all tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.